Chapter 41 Gear Queer.
"He'll be right down," said Jacob, smiling and luxuriantly bearded as ever, when he met her at Blue Ant's entrance. "How is Paris? Would you like coffee?"
"Fine, thanks. No coffee."
She felt ragged, and assumed she looked it, but also better, since Heidi had forced her to make the call. Looking up at the lobby's used eyeglasses chandelier, she welcomed whatever distraction or annoyance Big End might be able to provide. And here he suddenly came, the optically challenging blue suit muted, if that could be the word for it, by a black polo shirt. Behind him, silent and alert, his two umbrella-bearing minders. Leaving Jacob behind, he took Hollis's arm and steered her back out the door, followed by the minders.
"Not good, Jacob," he said to her quietly. "Slights."
"Really?"
"Not entirely positive yet," he said, leading her left, then left again at the corner. "But it looks likely."
"Where are we going?"
"Not far. I'm no longer conducting important conversations on Blue Ant premises."
"What's happening?"
"I should have the whole phenomenon modeled, have some good CG visualizations done. It's not clockwork, of course, but it's familiar. I'd guess it takes a good 5 or 6 years to cycle through."
"Milgram made it sound like a palace coup, some kind of takeover."
"Overly dramatic. A few of my brightest employees are quitting, those who haven't gotten where they'd hoped to with Blue Ant. So few do, really. Someone like Slight tries to quit with optimal benefits, of course, builds his own golden parachute, robs me blind if he can. Information flows out before these parties depart to the highest bidders. Always more than one golden parachutist."
He took her arm again and crossed the narrow street in the wake of a passing Mercedes.
"Too many moving parts for a solo operator. Slight, probably Jacob, two or three more."
"You don't seem that alarmed."
"I expect it. It's always interesting. It can shake other things out, reveal things. When you want to know how things really work, study them when they're coming apart."
"What does that mean?"
"Increased risk, increased opportunity. This one comes at an inopportune time, but then they do seem to. Here we are."
He'd stopped in front of a narrow Soho shopfront, one whose austerely minimalist signage announced Tanky and Tojo in brushed aluminum capitals. She looked in the window. An antique tailor's dummy, kitted out in waxed cotton, tweed, corduroy, harness leather. He held the door for her.
"Welcome,"
said a small Japanese man with round gold-framed glasses. There was no one else in the shop.
"We'll be in back,"
said Big End, leading Hollis past him.
"Of course. I'll see that you aren't disturbed."
Hollis smiled at the man, nodded. He bowed to her. He wore a tweed hacking jacket with sleeves made partially of waxed cotton. The back office in Tanky and Tojo was tidier, less shabby than she expected spaces like this to be. There was no evidence of employees attempting to alleviate boredom, no stabs at humor, no wistful pockets of non-work affect. The walls were freshly painted gray. Cheap white shelving was piled with plastic-wrapped stock, shoeboxes, books of fabric samples.
"Milgram and Slight were in South Carolina,"
said Big End, seating himself behind the small white IKEA desk. One of its corners, facing her, was chipped, revealing some core material that resembled compacted granola. She sat on a very 80s-looking vanity stool, pale violet velour, bulbous, possibly the last survivor of some previous business here.
"Slight had arranged for us to have a look at a garment prototype. We'd picked up interesting industry buzz about it, though when we got the photos and tracings, really, we couldn't see why. Our best analyst thinks it's not a tactical design, something for mall ninjas."
"For what?"
"The new Mitty demographic."
"I'm lost."
"Young men who dress to feel they'll be mistaken for having special capability. A species of cosplay, really. Endemic.
Lots of boys are playing soldier now. The men who run the world aren't, and neither are the boys most effectively bent on running it next, or the ones who are actually having to be soldiers, of course. But many of the rest have gone gear queer, to one extent or another.
Gear queer?
Biggin's teeth showed. We had a team of cultural anthropologists interview American soldiers returning from Iraq. That's where we first heard it. It's not wholly derogatory, mind you. There are actual professionals who genuinely require these things, some of them anyway, though they generally seem to be far less fascinated with them. But it's that fascination that interests us, of course.
It is?
It's an obsession with the idea not just of the right stuff, but of the special stuff. Equipment fetishism. The costume and semiotics of achingly elite police and military units. Intense desire to possess same, of course, and in turn to be associated with that world, with its competence, its cocksure exclusivity.
Sounds like fashion to me.
Exactly. Pants, but only just the right ones. We could never have engineered so powerful a locus of consumer desire. It's like sex in a bottle.
Not for me.
You're female.
They want to be soldiers?
Not to be. To self-identify as. However secretly. To imagine they may be mistaken for, or at least associated with. Virtually none of these products will ever be used for anything remotely like what they were designed for. Of course, that's true of most of the contents of your traditional Army-Navy store. Whole universes of wistful male fantasy in those places. But the level of consumer motivation we're seeing, the fact that these are often what amount to luxury goods and priced accordingly, that's new. I felt like a neurosurgeon when this was brought to my attention, discovering a patient whose nervous system is congenitally and fully exposed. It's just so nakedly obvious. Fantastic, really.
And it ties into military contracting?
Deeply, though not simply. A lot of the same players, where the stuff actually originates, but your civilian buyer, your 21st century Walter Mitty, needs it the way a mod in this street in 1965 needed the right depth of vent on a suit coat.
It sounds ridiculous to me.
Almost exclusively a boy thing.
Almost, she agreed, remembering Heidi's IDF bra.
Milgram and Slight were in South Carolina because it seemed someone there might be on the brink of a Department of Defense contract for pants. Since it's something we've been looking to get into ourselves quite actively, we decided to have a closer look at their product.
They who?
We're still looking into that.
It's not the sort of thing I'd have ever imagined you doing. Military contracts, I mean.
I don't get it. It's the one garment industry with none of the fantastic dysfunction of fashion, and hugely better profit margins. But at the same time, everything that works in fashion also works in military contracting.
Not everything, surely.
More than you imagine. The military, if you think about it, largely invented branding. The whole idea of being in uniform. The global fashion industry is based on that. But the people whose prototype we had Milgram photograph and make rubbings of in South Carolina have evidently turned slight. And here we are.
Where?
In a position, he said firmly, of possible danger.
Because Slight's your personal IT man?
Because of who and what they seem to be. I've had a more genuinely personal IT man looking out for me, keeping track of Slight and the various architectures he's been erecting, both those he's told me about and those he hasn't. I did say I've been through this before. So in most cases, I wouldn't be as concerned, and not in this way. But one of these people was here, in London. He followed you and Milgram to Paris, with Slight's help.
Foley, Milgram calls him.
We must assume that Foley, so-called, was following you as well. That overlap I mentioned between the actual elite and the mall ninjas, that can be a problematic segment in this particular Venn diagram.
I saw him, Hollis said. He followed me into the basement of the building where I'd gone to... She hesitated.
Meet Meredith Overton. I had Milgram debriefed last night in Paris. He was particularly unnerved to have run into Rausch.
So was I, though Rausch was more rattled to see me, it seemed to me. He thought you were checking up on him. Is he with Slight?
I doubt it, said Big End. He's not that fast. Do you know who designs Gabriel Hounds yet?
No, but either Meredith already does, or she thinks she can find out.
And what do you judge it will take to induce her to tell us, or to find out and tell us?
She had a shoe line. It failed financially, and somehow the bulk of the final season was misplaced.
Yes, we're looking at her now. That was a good line. She prefigured the best of the back of Harajuku tendencies.
She thinks they're in a warehouse in Seattle, Tacoma, somewhere. She imagines Blue Ant might be able to locate something like that. If they're found, she believes, she's in a position to legally claim them.
And then?
She'd sell them. On eBay, she said. They're worth more now, evidently.
But mainly as a relaunch strategy, said Big End. The eBay sales would attract cool hunters, generate attention in the industry.
She didn't mention that.
She wouldn't. She needs to leverage fresh financing, either to relaunch the line herself or sell it to the Ghost Branders.
The what?
Ghost Branders. They find brands, sometimes extinct ones, with iconic optics or a viable narrative, buy them, then put out denatured product under the old label. Meredith's shoes probably have enough cult cachet to warrant that on an interestingly small scale.
Is something like that why you're after Gabriel Hounds?
I'm more interested in their reinvention of exclusivity. Far ahead, say, of the Burberry label you can only buy in one special outlet in Tokyo, but not here and not on the web. That's old-school geographical exclusivity. Gabriel Hounds is something else. There's something spectral about it. What did Overton tell you?
She saw Ajay slipping the little blade into the base of the Blue Ant figurine back in number 4.
She knew someone in fashion school here, or around it, who knew someone in Chicago. She believes that that person, in Chicago then, is the Hounds designer.
You don't think she knows?
She may not. She says she wound up on an email list announcing Hounds drops.
We assumed there must be one, he said. We've put a fair bit of effort into finding it.
Nothing.
She took one of the books of swatches from where it lay on the shelf nearest her. It was amazingly heavy, its cover plain heavy brown card, marked with a long number in chisel-tipped black felt pen. She opened it. Thick, wholly synthetic materials, strangely buttery to the touch, like samples of the hides of robotic whales.
What is this?
They make zodiacs out of it, he said.
The inflatable boats.
She put it back on the shelf, deciding as she did that this was not the time to be bringing up the bug in the figurine, if in fact she was going to.
Foley himself, said Big End, may not be that dangerous, though we don't know. A fantasist designing for fantasist consumers. But the person who's employing him is another matter. I haven't been able to find out as much as I'd like. Currently, I'm having to go outside Blue Ant, bypass Slight and his architecture for even basic intelligence.
How do you mean dangerous?
Not good to know, said Big End. Or to be known by. Not good to be seen as being in competition with. That little bit of industrial espionage in South Carolina, as it happened, put Slight in their camp. Given what I've managed to learn so far, We are likely regarded, now, as the enemy. Who are they? They were at some point, usually, the people our new demographic imagines being. What are you looking at?
Your suit.
It's by Mr. Fish.
It is not. You told me nobody could find him.
He may be selling furniture in California. Antiques. That's one story. But I found his cutter.
You're really worried about these contracting people? Foley?
Contractors, that would be. In that other, more recently newsworthy sense. I have an unusual amount on my plate now, Hollis. One of my long-term projects, something that runs in background, has recently been showing strong signs of possible fruition. It's frustrating to be distracted now, but I'm determined not to drop any balls. Your getting hurt would constitute a dropped ball.
He was looking at her now, with something she took to be the artful emulation of actual human concern, but she understood that that indicated there really might be something to be afraid of. She shivered on the ridiculous velour toadstool.
"Florence," he said, "I have a flat there. Lovely. I'll send you there. Today.
I have Meredith in play. She's coming back here with George, probably here already. Reg needs him in the studio. You can't assign me that specific a task, then send me away when I'm about to complete it. I'm not working for you that way."
All of which was true, but, having gotten as far as Gareth's voicemail, she felt she needed to be here, where she'd told him she was, at least until she discovered where he was. Big End nodded.
"I understand, and I do want the identity of the Hound's designer. But you need to be careful. We all do."
"Who's Tanky, Hubertus? Assuming that's Tojo out front."
"I suppose I am," he said.